Blog Talk Radio. It's time for Monday Night Radio. Monday night is your night to talk with the experts. Call us now to get into the queue at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. Call us now or email your questions and comments to comments@mondaynightradio.com or tweet them to us at Monday Radio. And now, here's your host, Ann P. Mitchell, Esquire. Talking about making it all the more interesting. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. I want to remind you about next week's show when we will have Mr. Arun Gandhi as our guest. Mr. Gandhi is the grandson of the great Mohandas Mahatma Gandhi and is carrying on his grandfather's work. And he will be speaking with us about how we can be the change we want to see in the world and how we as individuals can make a difference toward a more nonviolent world. That's next Monday, same time, same place. Tonight, we are talking about funeral planning. And while that might sound like a rather dry subject, I can promise you that tonight's show is going to be anything but. But first, a little quiz. Who out there knows what it says on the tombstone of W.C. Fields? You can send us your answers in ever so many ways. You can email them to comments@mondaynightradio.com. You can send us a message on AOL Instant Messenger at Monday Night Radio. You can send us a message on Facebook. We are at facebook.com, Monday Night Radio. Or you can Twitter us at Monday Radio. Twitter is the one place where they wouldn't let us have Monday Night Radio. It was too long, but you can find us on Twitter at Monday Radio. And, of course, please remember to sign up for our newsletter so you can be among the first, our insider edition, to find out who our new upcoming guests are. And you'll also get notices of the interviews and the audio as it's posted to the website. And finally, you know you can call in your questions and comments for our guest tonight by calling 866-MONDAY-6. You can call that number from anywhere in North America, 866-MONDAY-6. So on to tonight's guest. Gail Rubin is an expert on funeral planning. She has a degree, and you know I'm just going to butcher this, but if you just hang on one second, I'll actually get the correct acronym. It's the A-E, oh, hang on there, I just don't want to do that to her. It is A-D-E-C. She's a member of the Association for Death Education and Counseling. That's at A-D-E-C. And she is the author of the Family Plot blog. She has written a column about death and dying and life celebration at the Albuquerque Tribune. And before I butcher anything else, let me bring Gail on. Gail, are you there?
I am here, Anne. Thanks for having me.
Oh, Gail, welcome to Monday Night Radio. It is our pleasure. Thank you for being our guest.
Oh, this is an important topic to talk about. Yes.
It's a very important topic, and we have a lot of ground to cover. We already have quite a few people calling in with questions and comments. And
excellent.
Let's see. Here's what I want to do. Before we get on to the sort of meat of tonight, I have to ask you, as I was doing research for tonight, I noticed that you are not only the author of an upcoming book, which is called A Good Goodbye, Funeral Planning for Those Who Don't Plan to Die, which I think is a great title and says it right there. But I noticed you also have written a book called A Girl's Pocket Guide to Trouser Trout. And I just had to ask you, what is that about? Why, yes, I did.
about dating and relationships in terms of fly fishing. If men were fish and women the anglers, it's your how-to guide to land a good catch. So it draws parallels between the finer points of fly fishing and dating and relationships.
And now, are you a fly fisher? What caused you to draw that parallel?
Well, I was married in my 20s and then got divorced and spent 14 years in the dating pool. And just being out there dating and, casting about. I actually was coming to Colorado on a trip with some friends of mine, and the guy who was driving just like pulled over to the side of the road when we were up in the mountains next to this winding stream, went trooping off into the woods. I said to his wife, brace yourself. No, he's out airing his trouser trout. This kind of set the tone for the whole weekend, and we just started brainstorming and laughing about the whole topic, and I took 4 pages of notes, and the next morning,
wow.
I said, you know what? This could work as a book.
There's a book in that. Well, very interesting, and it does show also that you are a diverse person in terms of your interests and your abilities.
Diverse, and I bring a sense of humor to both death and love and death.
Love and death, there you go. Well, you know, I have to tell you that, as you may know, this is only slightly related, and it's off on a tangent, but I love this joke of mine, so I'm going to tell it. It's not a joke, but I was in Las Vegas once, that's enough said about Las Vegas, and I noticed, you know, one of the many, many wedding chapels was called the Hitching Post. As you may or may not know, in a previous life, I was a divorce attorney, a father's rights lawyer, and so I was very aware of the sort of the numbers of how many Las Vegas weddings end up in divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would be great, next to the Hitching Post, to have 2 additional little businesses right down in a row. You'd have the Hitching Post for when you get married.
Uh-huh.
Then you'd have the Bitching Post for when the couple needs therapy. And then finally, when it all falls apart, you'd have the Ditching Post.
I love it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Anyway, we're here to talk about funerals and funeral planning and life celebration, which is, I think, perhaps a more apt way to describe a funeral, because that's really what it is, and it's very much for the people who've been left behind to get together and to have some closure and to celebrate the life of the one who's passed on. And
mm-hmm.
and gosh,
absolutely.
I just have a bunch of questions for you. The first one being, isn't the funeral really for the family members more than it is for the deceased? But I note that that. Okay, but what I note is that there seems to be a movement, and I think I've noticed some of this on your blog, for and perhaps that's even what your book is about. You know, I notice where it says you should that people can absolutely get involved planning their own funerals and sitting down with their grown children and their other family members to really talk about what it will be like. And I'm wondering, isn't that at odds with the concept where the funeral is actually for those who have been left behind?
Well, no, because it's opening up lines of communication between the generations about, you know, this is kind of my idea of how I'd like you to celebrate my life. But they don't have to do what you tell them to. There are different ways to guarantee that they carry out your wishes if you really feel strongly about it. But really, it's death is such a topic that doesn't get talked about much. So in order for us to properly celebrate someone's life, we don't do it. We're not good at that because, you know, we'd much rather have a party. Well, weddings and funerals have very similar elements. Not only do you have the clergy and the transportation and the location and alerting all the family and friends and the flowers and whatnot. But if brides and grooms plan their weddings the way most people plan their funerals, they'd be scrambling to pull everything together in 3 days. So the idea of just talking about what you would like, I think very often at the end of life, and by the way, I'm right in the middle of my 30 funerals in 30 days challenge, where I am going to a funeral or memorial service a day. And a lot of them are religious, even for people who are not were not religious. And I find that very interesting, but that is a function of the people who are remembering the person who died. So, and people find a lot of comfort in religious ritual, even if the family is not so much religious. I cannot tell you how many times I've heard the 23rd Psalm, Ecclesiastes, turn to everything there is a season. Revelations talking about new heaven and new earth, the new Jerusalem. But, you know, it's words of comfort that people want to hear at this time, that, oh, the spirit lives on and we'll be together again. I hear that a lot at these funerals. But I've also gone to a number of events that one particular stands out, of a woman who was so popular and so beloved. It started out with some Catholic sprinkling of holy water and a few prayers, and then the priest, they just took off, and the whole thing just became a celebration of this woman's life. And I got up there afterwards and saw that she had a thing for turtles, and there was like a little ring of turtles with a candle in the middle of it. And they were talking, just telling great stories about this woman. And it was like, I wish I knew this woman in person by the time we were done. So those are different things to consider. It is for the living, the people who are left behind. I've had people tell me, you know, well, my brother's partner died 3 years ago. And he said, I don't want a memorial service. But we had one, and my brothers put it very clearly. We didn't do it for him. We did it for us, and that really is what the funeral or the memorial service is about.
Right. Now, well, first, before we go any further, for those out there who might be feeling a little uncomfortable with this subject, Gail has a great quote, and that quote is, just as talking about sex won't make you pregnant, talking about funerals won't make you dead. And that's... Well, that's obviously true, but it's a really good point. And then you finish that by saying your family will benefit from the conversation. So have you ever had, you know, you analogize funerals to weddings. You know, they have a lot of common elements and themes. You know, there's certainly been a trend for people to write their own wedding vows. Have you ever run into a situation where the not yet deceased wants to write their own eulogy?
Absolutely. There is a... something in the Jewish tradition called an ethical will, which can make a wonderful reading at a funeral. I haven't yet heard anybody do that, but people will read their ethical wills when they turn 50 as part of a special service at the synagogue. But so, I just went to a memorial service on Saturday. And this was very interesting. In the time before the internet, people used to take out ads in publications, like single scene kind of publications, and you would write a letter to that person if you were interested in meeting them. And this guy who had died, he was one of the first of the baby boomers, and he had written a letter to this woman who has been his friend for 24 years, and he wrote it when he was 40 years old, describing himself. And she read it at the service. And that was amazing, to hear him describing himself in his own voice from this letter from 24 years ago. So that's another way you can speak at your own funeral. And I also recommend videotaping yourself, if saying, you know, whatever words of wisdom you want to pass on to people, because audiovisual is getting very big in funeral service these days, not just photo montages, but showing of movies, and even webcasting of funerals. I heard have a great story in my book about a funeral that took place in a small town in Ohio for a woman who was a missionary in Puerto Rico. And when she got sick, she returned to this small town where she was originally from but hadn't lived in like 40 years. She'd been in Puerto Rico all that time. And if you judge the funeral based on the people in the little town in Ohio, there were only, you know, a couple dozen people there. But there were 200 people in Puerto Rico who were tuning in via the internet to participate in this funeral service. And they even sent eulogies in via YouTube. So
oh, wow.
The service is really changing. Yeah.
That's really quite something. Now, you know what? I have a lot of other questions here myself, but this show is really all about the callers and letting them have access to you. And let's do it, because the switchboard is just lit up. It's awesome. So right now we are going to go to Rob in Chicago. And I understand Rob has a story and a question. Hello, Rob. Are you there?
I'm here.
Well, welcome to Monday Night Radio. Hi, Rob.
Hi.
And there's Gail Rubin for you.
Well, Gail, congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
What I thought was a question, I guess it's just going to be an affirmation that the funeral is so much about the people involved. And not it's about the person who has died, but for the people remembering that person. So just as a way of affirmation, for a while I was researching my own book called The Art of Dying and was working in a funeral home. And one of the stories that stuck out for me was a funeral for this very elderly person. He had his children, his grandchildren, and his great-grandchildren there. The oldest of the living generation, this grandfather was looking around for his granddaughter, and in the middle, or I shouldn't say in the middle of the funeral, but during the visitation in sort of a downtime, he sits down, and I'm sort of ushering people in and out and watching this, and he grabs a chair and sits down with his granddaughter, who is about to turn 10, and he explains to her that all of his grandchildren, at 10 years old, he takes for a trip, and they spend sort of a little weekend vacation together. And so he's sitting down, talking with his granddaughter and telling her, you know, what he would like to do, and asking her to think about you know, what kind of trip that she would like to take. And she was just thrilled. She was all excited and running around to tell all her cousins about what she got to do. And in the environment there wasn't so much a mourning, sad saying goodbye, but a wonderful time for this family to be together. And I think it's something that we often miss when we think that a funeral is simply about saying goodbye to somebody.
Well, and in fact, again, funerals and weddings, very similar things. You know, people come together during a wedding or a funeral. Sometimes it seems like that's the only time the extended family gets together, and there is. Yeah, absolutely. No reason why it can't have those warm moments, and in fact, it's absolutely beneficial.
Thank you for writing, you know, such an important book to encourage people to be thinking about this kind of stuff in advance.
Well,
thank you very much. Yeah, thank you for that great comment, and we have a question that has come in through our Facebook page, and I'm wondering if that's something that, you know, this subject is something that you could talk about. The person is wondering whether children should be allowed at funerals, and in particular, he relates the story of a 6.5-year-old boy whose mother passed away, and he was not allowed to go to the funeral, and I certainly have thoughts on that, as I'm sure does he, but he's wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Well, in fact, I did address that question in A Good Goodbye with the help of a grief counselor who I know. And in fact, between her and anecdotal stories I've heard from people in the Association for Death Education and Counseling is, yes, with proper preparation, bringing children to funerals is fine. You can use teachable moments like the death of a pet or seeing an animal dead on the side of the road to talk about, you know, death is a part of life and it happens to all living things. And you want to be careful about explaining death to kids in ways that they can comprehend. You don't want to say, Grandpa is sleeping now, because you might have a terrified child who will never go to sleep again. So you want to keep it at a very basic level. And it's okay to express sadness over the loss. You know, nobody expects you to be doing this with a smile on your face. It's fine to cry. It's a good thing to cry. It shows that's how we express our relationships with people. But she, this counselor, Joan Gunselman, she does it, say never force a child to kiss a corpse or touch a corpse. I mean, if they want to reach out and touch him or put one of their toys in the casket or whatever, that's fine. The thing is, a lot of kids, the anecdotes and the information that we get says that kids that are taken to funerals grow up to be better adjusted adults than the kids that are kept away.
Well, and specifically, you know, speaking now, we're not just talking about children generally attending a funeral, but we're talking about the child of the deceased, where, you know, if you could talk a little bit about the issue of closure and being able to say goodbye. To me, my own thought would be, God forbid that I were to pass away soon. I mean, I certainly hope I don't, but I would want my son to be able to have that opportunity to say goodbye to me and to have that closure. And I'm reminded, actually, and I don't mean to necessarily equate the importance of a family pet, and I do during the hour want to talk about pet funerals with you and that. Mm-hmm. But in particular, I'm reminded when the first time our son encountered the passing of a loved one, it was a cat, and the cat had passed away at home. It was actually, if there can be a good death, it was a good death. He had had a very long life, and he passed away with the people around him that loved him and that he knew. And my son had a chance to say goodbye because it was obvious it was going to happen any second, literally. And we called him in and said, do you want to say goodbye? And he did. But he came with us to the vet. We had the cat's body in a box. And he requested to see the cat again one last time in the box, even though he knew he was dead and he'd already said goodbye as he was leaving. He needed that. And so we let him. I mean, to me, I was a little nervous about that. But so I'm just thinking, even with a cat, he needed that. And to deny a child, to deprive a child of that, it's not like you can go back and have a do-over.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So
no, I'm all for bringing children to funerals.
Okay. Excellent.
As long as they understand where they're going and what to expect about what's going to happen there. Kids can really, they can handle it as long as, they have the closeness and the warmth and the support while they're doing it. It's not just,
right, let's go to the switchboard again.
The funeral home.
Well, of course. We have Michael calling from Seattle, and I think he might actually have something to say about this particular subject. Hello, Michael. Are you there?
I am.
Hi, Michael. Welcome to Monday Night Radio.
Thank you, Muchly. I was the 6.5-year-old in question.
Oh, what happened to you?
Well, the first I knew was when my dad told me to go and stay in the bedroom. And, of course, I cracked the door a little bit, and I saw these two men in white, all dressed in white coming in with this funny metal contraption with wheels. And a little while later, they wheeled it out with my mom. And about a week later, my dad took me to see my mom in the hospital, and he arranged some alternate accommodation for me, and one day, one of the teachers who was teaching me, again, I was 6.5 years old at the time, said that I should go home because the lady I was staying with would have had something important to tell me, and I went home, and no, ate lunch, went back to school, came home from school, and your mom is dead. And I didn't need anybody to explain to me what death was. I wasn't able to foresee all of the consequences that would flow from that. I had a moment of uncontrollable grief, went into my bedroom, and I can't recall, probably cried, I can't recall. And sometimes other little kids can be rather nasty at times like that. But for whatever reason, it was explained to me that the other adults didn't want a kid at the funeral, and that, you know, seemed unfair to me at the time. But you know, what a kid thinks is fair or doesn't is not apropos. But for some reason, our family also didn't think much of visiting grave sites, and my parents never took me to the grave site any of the time after that. And I subsequently discovered that, again, this was back in the 60s, that the ashes got misplaced. The ashes were held at the funeral home for like 3 or 4 months, and then they finally gave up and handed it off to something called the public guardian. And I only found out this past Mother's Day when they said, oh yeah, your mom is interned here. And I go there and I'm walking around, can't find anything. And in due course, I do research with appropriate authorities, and they say, you know, they're probably somewhere in a rose bed somewhere. So that's my story. I would say that any kid older than maybe 4 is probably far more in tune with what's going on with the situation than most adults would think. Mm-hmm. And B, it's important to have a sense of, you know, who our progenitors are, and to, you know, every so often at very least, you know, introduce the living members to those who have gone on before. I did have an opportunity. A friend of mine had a friend who passed away and was wondering what to do for the kids, and the suggestion was to get them a daddy bear. These were like 7, 8-year-old kids, and they immediately knew what to do with the daddy bear, because the husband had gone out for a walk and had been struck by a car, and they didn't know how to deal with the grief either, but they knew how to deal with the daddy bear.
So was that a teddy bear that they were able to cuddle and hang on to and cry into?
Yeah.
That's an awesome suggestion, Michael. Thank you so much for the call.
You're most welcome.
Thank
if you have
you.
No further questions, I will retreat
so,
from
I mean,
listening to the.
Have you dealt with what happened with your mom? And I mean, do you feel like?
I don't think it's really possible.
Mm-hmm.
You just sort of have to accept. You know, when I found out that they did not know where the ashes were. I probably could have digged into it deeper, but I just said, you know, they're on a rose bed somewhere. And I made a point of not telling my dad. Because he is aged at this point, and his thought is that, you know, I just haven't done enough homework, and they're there if I only just go and look, but I know when she died, I know when the funeral was, I know the name of the funeral parlor, I know the date that the funeral parlor handed them off to the whomever, And somehow or other, something got misplaced.
Mm.
And, you know, whatever. There's nothing that can be done about it now.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, there was another funeral that I have attended that was notable.
Mm-hmm.
And this was for my a maternal grandparent. And we went to the funeral home, and the guy gets up there to speak. He's an aged, respected gentleman. And he begins to read from the official eulogy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell where the fill-in-the-blanks marks were on the eulogy.
Oh.
And
yeah.
Rage. The only way to put it. I mean...
And that's why people should be involved with planning their own funerals, right, Gail?
Yeah.
So that doesn't happen. Michael, thank you so much. We're gonna move on because we have a lot of other callers, but
understood.
I'm really glad you called in.
I've probably monopolized far too much of the time. Have a
good Not
night.
At all. We're glad okay. you called in, and please stay listening.
Thanks. I'll speak. Yep.
So, Gail, there's what I think is just such a splendid example of, you know, kids. Of course, every family has to do what's right for them, but, here's a man who clearly should have been allowed there to say goodbye to his mom. It's heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I was going to say, I was just at a memorial service today for a man who had died suddenly, and I asked around, but nobody seemed to know or be able or want to tell me what killed him, but he had a 2-year-old son that was there, and a lot of the other people there had young children there, and I mean, his body wasn't there; he had been cremated, and it was a box of ashes sitting there. But those kids were brought, and you know, maybe they did or did not know what you know was going on. It was basically a religious service, so.
Mm-hmm.
But people are bringing their kids.
Well,
what I wish
people
would do is shut their cell phones off. Oh, I cannot tell you how many times, even after the people have been told, turn your cell phones off, cell phones are going off in the middle of funerals, and it really detracts from the proceedings.
Well, it's also very disrespectful, I think. And
oh,
just
is.
one more word about kids, and then let's go on to another caller, but I just wanted to say that nobody from my generation will ever forget the pictures of, you know, John Jr. at JFK's funeral.
Oh, yeah.
Doing his little
yeah.
salute in his little, you know, wool
mm-hmm.
coat. So he certainly was very young. And I would just like to add that I was not much older than him at that time. I'm not quite that old, but still, I remember those pictures. Let's go now. We have, let's see here. Who do we have? We have Peggy calling from Florida with a story for you. Hi, Peggy. You're on Monday Night Radio with Ann and Gail Rubin.
Hi. Thank you so much. And I just want to say, first of all, how important I think the work is that Gail is doing and that you are doing by having these discussions for people. It's just absolutely wonderful to expand people's ideas of how this all can be done. And my story kind of, you know, shows the opposite end of the spectrum from Michael and the fill-in-the-blanks funeral. I'm a funeral celebrant. And for 20 years before that, I was a psychotherapist, and I've known people who have the haunting sense that of incompleteness when the funeral doesn't honor the person who has died, when whoever does it misses the boat, and the person isn't celebrated. It can really leave people with a very sad and poignant feeling. And I also think that funerals need to be real, not to portray people as if they were saints. And I'd like to give you an example of that. When I'm teaching, sometimes I call this story the funeral for the man that nobody liked. But I did a funeral for a man who was apparently very difficult to live with in his life. He was a sea captain. He was a hard drinker. He didn't like to get close to people or attach to people or stay too much in one place. He was very shrewd businessman, which actually made him sort of stingy to his children. And in general, many things about him we would consider difficult. The daughter who hired me for the funeral had been estranged from him for 30 years. So she and I were talking in preparation for my writing the funeral for them, and I realized what she was very politely alluding to, the kinds of things she was in our conversation. So I told her, I said, I don't think we need to portray even very good people as saints. We need to portray them as real people, and even the best people are likely to have some kind of foible that drives their closest relatives crazy. And to talk about those and bring a chuckle and make them real can be very important. So we talked about that, and I told her that I knew how to talk about things that people thought of as negative in ways that were not negative. And so I wrote this ceremony, and this group of people got together. It was going to be a burial at sea. We all got on the boat to go out from the Fort Lauderdale Harbor to do this and have the ceremony and do the burial at sea. It was a small group of people. They weren't a large group of mourners. And his children, he had two adult children, and this is an idea that never, ever, ever would have occurred to me. The music they chose to play as the boat left Fort Lauderdale Pier and was moving out was "What Shall We Do with a Drunken Sailor?" It would never have occurred to me, but for this group of people and this sea captain father, this was perfect. It was absolutely perfect, and it set the tone for this is a real man who lived. He had lots of flaws, but he also had lots of good things, and he lived his life with integrity for him, the way he needed to live his life, and let's honor that. And afterward, the family told me that it was very, very healing to have the ceremony be authentic and real, that it really helped them a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is an awesome, awesome story, and I think that, thank you, Peggy. Thank you for calling in.
You're very welcome.
I think that illustrates a little bit what you said, Gail, about the need for humor and levity as well, and that's certainly something that I'm a huge proponent of. But I think some people think there's something unseemly about bringing humor in to the situation of death. What do you think of that?
Oh no, humor is a welcome relief, and in fact, people who are grieving will start laughing sometimes uncontrollably. Because it's such a roller coaster of emotions when you have lost somebody you love. I did want to talk about the four R's, by the way, just keying in on those elements that make a good funeral. You want to take the opportunity to remember and tell stories about that person. You know, the Jewish tradition is to not speak ill of the dead, and I think that's where that whole idea about you don't say bad things about people at their funerals comes from. But telling stories about that person, good, you know, that illustrate all elements of their personality, and to come to terms with the second R, the reality of the death. To, you know, that's why so many funerals have open caskets. Some people need to see a body in the casket, dead as it is, to really, you know, get that message home to their brain that, yes, this person is really dead. To reaffirm beliefs, whatever those beliefs may be, and to release the spirit of the deceased. So those four R's are all wound up in most funeral services. So remembering and reaffirming generates stories and laughter, and realizing and releasing helps prompt healing tears and goodbyes. So that's what you would find. And, of course, we always want that fifth R, no regrets.
No regrets.
Yeah. So you have no regrets when you get to the end of your days.
Speaking of living each day to its fullest and et cetera, I need to ask you, in your 30 funerals in 30 days, and definitely I'd like you to talk about that in a moment, but in one of the ones, you have a saying in there, and I just need to know what it means. So please tell me, Bande Bandhu, what is that?
I don't know. That's what was... I think that was their salute send off for this 98-year-old woman. What a sweet collection of folks. Oh my gosh! But their fond farewell was Banda Bandhu, and I don't know why, but it was.
Okay, I'm getting a note from my producer that says that our toll-free number for some reason is not working. It's not ringing through, and it's giving this odd message saying that the voicemail is full, which doesn't even make sense. So I have to apologize for that. If you're trying to call in, you can call in on the direct line, 347-857-3122. That's kind of hard to remember compared to the other number, but we'll have to get that fixed. I don't know what's going on. But, of course, you can always email comments and questions to comments@mondaynightradio.com. You can send us a message by AOL Instant Messenger at Monday Night Radio. You can send us a message on our Facebook page, which is on Facebook at Monday Night Radio. Or you can send us a message by Twitter to @MondayRadio. And again, this is Monday Night Radio, and we're with Gail Rubin. She's an expert on funeral planning. And Gail, we do have more callers we need to get to, but can you just tell us quickly about this 30 days for 30 funerals, or 30 funerals in 30 days?
30 days, yeah. October 30th was the 11th annual Create a Great Funeral Day. I did not create this day, but another woman who had written a workbook about creating a memorable funeral did. So I thought, well, this would be a good opportunity to start a 30-day challenge where I go to a funeral or memorial service every day for a month, well, for 30 days, and blog about it on my blog, The Family Plot. And I do little video stand-ups after every funeral or memorial service, a little bit about what I experienced, what I heard about the person who had died, and just sharing information. Like, I went to an American Legion celebration of life for a gentleman, and they actually did their own honor guard. I had no idea the American Legion had their own honor guard. So, and they did a rifle salute, actually doing a 5-gun, 3-round salute. And I found out, actually, that if you are retired military, that is, you've spent a number of years with the military and retired from the service, you can get a rifle salute from the government, from whatever branch, honor guard. But if you just, you know, served a few years and then you're a veteran, but you didn't do a full, you know, the military as your career, you can't get a rifle salute. But the American Legion will if you pay them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
and just going to all these different celebrations of life, and it just warms my heart to see how much love there is in the world for one's fellow man.
Are these? How are you turning up at these funerals? Are you just crashing? Are you the funeral crasher?
I am the funeral crasher. They're public events. They list them in the newspaper. That's what the obituaries are all about. And, I mean, I've noticed some of them do say, we will have a private service at our house. So, you know, that way you can't really crash that unless you know where they live, i.e. you're a friend or a family member. But most of these, they list the time, they list the place, they list, you know, information about the person. And I'm trying to mix it up with religious, non-religious, different religions. I just went to a Greek Orthodox service. and will be going to the funeral mass service tomorrow for Greek Orthodox. Two of the topics that get the most traffic on my blog are Greek Orthodox funeral traditions and Jewish headstone unveilings. I don't know why people keep looking that up, but they do. And they come to my blog to find out about it. One of the things that I've put on there are religious traditions for various religions. And there is no other book out there that I am aware of that brings all that together. Because we do have, you know, a multicultural interfaith society here now. And that's another conversation to have. If you're in an interfaith marriage, what are you going to do? You know, what kind of traditions are you going to follow? And
that's an excellent point. And you know what? It's a perfect segue into our next caller.
Hey.
We have Deborah Williams calling. I'm not sure where she's calling from, so maybe she can tell us, but she has a question about religious ceremonies. Deborah, are you there?
I'm here. I'm calling from Chicago.
All right, and thank you for waiting. I know you called in early.
Oh, that's okay. I've actually talked to Gail before, but I wanted to talk to her again and just bring up the whole idea. The latest statistics that I have seen say that about 60% of the people in North America are no longer affiliated with a religion, which means that, you know, kind of like how are they looking at things? Like, do you feel that people, more and more people are looking at different ways to do, you know, memorial services and funeral services? Are they looking for different venues? You know, especially now we're looking at more and more people are having to experience death at younger ages than we've ever experienced before because of, you know, all of the illnesses and sickness and diseases that have come up, where all of us have now experienced a death at a, you know, of a friend or a relative at a much, much younger age than our parents and our grandparents ever, you know, did. So, you know, I personally in my business feel like everything's changing, that younger generation coming up and people are looking at things differently, looking at different venues, looking at, you know, do I want to do a service in my home? Do I want to do it on the waterfront? Where do I want to do it? And they're also looking, or are they looking for, you know, financially better ways to do things, environmentally, 100% green things. I mean, the statistics I'm looking at are showing that the funeral home business, the actual burial business, is down by about 30%, and the cremation business is up by 30%. Are you seeing that as well?
Oh, yes.
Those are great questions. Thank you, Deborah.
Yeah, the majority of the funerals, memorial services that I'm going to, the bodies have been cremated. It's amazing. There is still burial taking place, but yeah, cremation is on the rise. And cremation opens up a whole range of creative possibilities because you're not bound to the time frame of within a week, you've got to get that body into the ground, embalmed or not.
Right.
And green burial is definitely a growing trend that is really almost returning to what we used to do before the rise of the modern funeral director. There was a study done by a science writer at Cornell University in 2002. She put together figures based on information from mortuary schools and funeral directors that said that every year conventional burials put more than 827,000 gallons of embalming fluid into the earth,
right.
Over 1.6 million tons of reinforced concrete for vaults, more than 90,000 tons of steel and 2,700 tons of copper and bronze for caskets, and 14,000 tons of steel for underground vaults. Now, the executive director of the Green Burial Council says that's enough metal to build a Golden Gate Bridge every year and enough concrete to build a two-lane highway from New York to Detroit every year, just going into the ground. And that is just not sustainable. But green burial, you're not using embalming. But, hey, we have refrigeration, and you use biodegradable caskets. Hey, it's the plain pine box. you know, cotton clothing or shrouds. And it's really like the Jewish and Muslim tradition is to do that, and it has been all along. So,
but don't you feel that, you know, with even whether they go with, you know, more of a green type burial, the financial perspective of this, you know, it's so much more expensive, as you know, to go to a funeral home and have any kind of a service versus going the cremation route and having a memorial service at a different venue or somewhere along the way. I'm finding that in my business, it's most of the time it's 50%, you know, change in pricing from
doing
a traditional type funeral versus doing a cremation and a memorial service, and yet the general public doesn't seem to be aware of those costs until they're actually in the funeral home dealing with the situation because they don't want to prepare for death.
Right, right.
And, of course, by then,
if they haven't had the conversation, right, because if you talk about it, it'll happen sooner. Well, that's not true. whether you talk about it or not, it's going to happen, but that's true. Cremation is much, much less. I mean, you could get away with under $1,000 for direct cremation and then having some kind of creative celebration of life. And,
right.
You know, funeral burial costs, you're talking $6,000, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, and even more, depending on how fancy you want to get.
Right.
Wow.
Here
very,
in Illinois,
very interesting.
Yeah, the average funeral home here in Illinois is usually between $12,000 and $15,000, which is a substantial amount of money mm-hmm. when you're dealing with a, you know, recession type economy. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, I guess part of my position is I love to see the fact that there's some people like yourself, Gail, and myself out there trying to educate people and say you have to prepare for this. You have to talk about it. You have to think about it because it is a substantial amount of money. And you don't want to necessarily leave that burden to your family. It would be nice if you made some of those decisions in advance so that at least your family knows, you know, what your desires are, whether it's cremation, burial, however you want it to be handled.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to mention to you was, I know when you were talking to Peggy and she was talking about the personalization, I wanted to share with you a wonderful story, too, about a woman whose service that we had done, and she had been in the theater, and she actually went with the burial, and how we ended her service was by giving her last standing ovation, which I thought was a phenomenal way to say goodbye to her, by giving her something that, you know, was probably the most rewarding thing when you're in the theater business, was to have that standing ovation. So, and it was very emotional, it was very tearful, but it was also very fulfilling for everybody who was there.
That's awesome.
That's great.
We need to go on to the next caller.
Yeah.
Do you guys know how to get in touch with each other? This would be a great time, Gail, for you to give your contact info.
Yeah, Debbie Williams. I was on your blog. You wrote about me a while ago, so
yes,
thank you,
Deborah.
You're
in the book.
Gail, why don't you go ahead and take this opportunity to tell people how they can reach you, and then we'll go to a couple more callers, but we're just about out of time now.
Oh, no, it's flown by. Yes, my website is goodgoodbye.com. And, in fact, I'd like to encourage everybody to go there. I have a planner in the back of the book that is an excellent resource for pulling all the information together that you would need to pass on to someone. As a free download, you just type in your name and email, so you'll see it when you go to agoodgoodbye.com. And
goodgoodbye.com.
Yeah.
And
the book is coming out very soon.
All right, let's go to Michelle in El Paso. She has a question and a story. Thank you for waiting, Michelle. Just I'd ask you to keep it, you know, not too long.
Oh, of course not, and I'll be quick. Gail, congratulations on the book, and I'm going to segue into creative burial options because I wrote a book, Exit Strategy, Thinking Outside the Box, that talks 18 different ways that you can shoot your loved one into space, turn him into diamonds, blow him into glass, and I found, Gail, you're probably the same, you know, just being so touched by all the services that I witnessed. But on a lighter side, my book really talked about the wonderful celebrations of life, putting your loved ones into a reef ball and have it go into the ocean and be a habitat for fish, and watching someone really get shot into space and stick size container or turning your loved one into a diamond and wearing them. So, Gail, my question for you is, are funeral directors embracing creative alternatives to traditional burial options? Instead of just doing the traditional burial, are they embracing? Because, you know, just like other callers have said, we don't want to waste our natural resources. We want to think green. And mm-hmm. I'm a boomer. Mm-hmm. So at the bottom line mm-hmm. is I got to be creative. I want to do something mm-hmm. my way and go out with a real bang.
Well, and actually, yes, funeral directors are open to whatever families want to do. And that's the key about planning ahead and meeting with a funeral director ahead of time. The problem
right.
is when you wait until somebody dies, then
right.
you're like, you're under stress and you got to do something like now. And it really cuts short your creativity cycle
right.
when you're under the gun like that. So,
but like you said earlier, when you're going to go through cremation, then you really do have that opportunity to really think about that person and how they might have wanted to go out. For you know, mm-hmm. I witnessed a person in California who wanted their grandmother to be shot into fireworks, and so the family gathered on the shore, and it was this beautiful ceremony, and it was so uplifting. Instead of really being, you know, this horrific situation, it was, you know, people are laughing and crying and remembering, and it was a true celebration of life.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, really cool. Michelle, thank you so much for the call.
Oh, thank you. And thanks, Gail. Can't wait to get the book. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That actually, you know, brings up a question that I think that's important when you're talking about funeral planning, which is that you sort of, there's this stereotype of funeral directors and the funeral parlors as sort of preying on the family at their, you know, their hour of grief, and that's
mm-hmm.
when they sell them the upsell of the really fancy lined coffins. And is that, do you think funeral directors get an unfair rap? Are they really, for the most part, there to try and help the family and to guide them?
The majority of funeral directors that I talk to and have worked with are really feel this is a mission, a service that they do for people. And when there's a death in the family, family's not thinking straight. And the thing is, going in and making arrangements before you need them, you can think with your head and not with your heart, not with guilt. Oh my God, I didn't visit my mother enough, you know, before she died, so I'm going to get a really pricey casket to make up for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and funeral directors love nothing better than, you know, people who say, I want to do something different, because they can, and they will work with a family, but to whatever extent they want to get creative and do. Did I tell you there was a Harley Davidson at this funeral that I went to on Saturday? Sitting
no,
next to the casket? Yes.
What was it, the deceased?
The deceased was loved hot rods and Corvettes and riding his motorcycle. So they actually brought
and
his motorcycle in and parked it next to his casket.
Well, that represents him, and
yeah.
that's who he was. We are going to let Christine from Tucson have the last call here. She's been waiting very patiently to talk to you. Christine, you're on the air with Ann and Gail.
Hi, Ann. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And Gail, thank you for all you're doing. I'll quickly ask. I am a life cycle celebrant here in Tucson and also a home funeral guide. So I do help people, as your column says, match, hatch, and dispatch, and also into the continuum of caring for their own at home. And just last week, I was in a home funeral situation and saw so many of the messages that you've expressed during the course of this call touched upon, you know, the personal expression, involvement of children, neighbors. And I'm wondering, in your 30-day challenge, if you plan to attend a home funeral and how much you have seen a paradigm shift occurring around that in your research.
Well, home funerals don't get advertised in the obits. I can't
mm-hmm.
crash a funeral if I don't know about it. So
you're going purely by the obituaries, I see.
Yeah. Unless, you know, somebody tells me about something, but nobody's done that yet.
Well, I should have called you last week.
Oh, darn. Somebody in my area? Yeah.
Well, Albuquerque to Tucson, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you seeing more interest and activity around that in the time that you've been doing your research and your work?
In fact, in A Good Goodbye, I do write about Elizabeth Knox and her crossings. You must know about her.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. That's wonderful to hear.
And in fact, at the ADEC conference back in April, they actually had a workshop on how to deal with a body for home death care. That was very interesting too. It's a lot like what I do with the Hever Kadisha, which is the Jewish Burial Society, washing and dressing the body.
Christine, thank you for the call. We have run out of time, Gail. I cannot believe it flew. We didn't even get to go to get to the subject of pets at funerals and pet funerals, and I was hoping
and
to pick your brain about
that. And open-air cremations. I talked to those people.
And I did you see? We'll just have to have you come back because I actually asked you about that, but we have just, you know, this is the show for the callers, and they were there for you. So thank you so very much. Our guest is Gail Rubin. She is the funeral planning expert, and her upcoming book, A Good Goodbye, you can find it or find the information about it at her website, agoodgoodbye.com. She hasn't mentioned this, but you can also find her at Twitter at The Family Plot. And Gail, thank you again so very much for joining us. We really appreciate
it.
And next week, again, be sure to come and join us again when we have Arun Gandhi, grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, and he will be talking about carrying on his grandfather's work and helping people to be the change they want to see in the world. Talk to you all next time. Thank you. Have a great week.